Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
Spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
All right.
Hello and welcome to a Need More Chaos edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. While memos were dispatched, only South Carolina was able to deliver. Kentucky, Maryland, Illinois, Baylor, UCLA all tried really hard, but they were unable to deliver the upheaval that the Tide needed. But you know, exhale, that's okay. Alabama can still play for pride, which probably itself is a message that was not fully received until halftime on Saturday. In many ways, Alabama's game against Austin Peay reminded me of the late October contest we had with Mississippi State. Certainly not a perfect 10, but a lot to like without having to look really, really hard. Alabama currently sits at 9-2 and certainly a great distance away from preseason expectations. But the Tide is capable of a strong finish and probably nearly a top four finish in the ranking. Again, I know we're spoiled Alabama fans. That's a great distance from preseason expectations, but truly a strong finish and a launch into the recruiting season and into the offseason as well. We're going to take off with offense, but real quick, just a little footnote, a little asterisk that we're going to circle back to. Hang on to the end. We've got some cool stuff that we'll talk to at the end. But offense, let's take a look. Again, lots of bells and whistles, lots of things to like. 27 first downs, 527 total yards, near perfect run to pass balance, 263 rushing yards, 264 passing yards, a 1 yard differential, nearly almost right at 36 minutes of time of possession. Again, lots to like. The only, you know, onlys that we might sort of characterize would be 34 points. We'd like to see more than 34 points and two turnovers. And those are certainly frustrating. There was a fumble and an interception. There was a special teams turnover. So there was three on the day, but only two directly attributed to the offense. Those are things we'd certainly like to have back. If all of those offensive stats were exactly the same, but Alabama had scored 48 or 52 points, we'd feel a lot different about it. And but let's be pleased with the 27 first downs, 527 yards of total offense. There's a capability demonstrated there that certainly we can that we can build upon, and certainly just a demonstration of capability as well. I thought Bryce was good, not great. He was 18 of 24, which is still 75% passing. So maybe I'm even being unfair in my bar. In my judgment there, he did have 221 yards passing. We like that above three. We love that above four. But then if that happens, you don't have the balance on the running game. And I really like having north of 250 yards rushing. So it's got to come from somewhere. There's not an infinite number of yards to be had. And above five and a pretty even split, I think is nice. Bryce had two touchdowns. I think for my money, my eyes tell me he continues to lack full arm strength. I don't think he's completely fully healthy. I do think that he's still on something of a pitch count. And he alluded to maybe that not being true in his post game. But I think Coach before the game in his pressers was definitely talking about the managing of Bryce's health and his arm and what he can do and sort of the pain tolerance and the treatment. So I do think there's still some treatment there. And I do think he's lost some zip on his deep balls and just arm strength in general. I don't think it's there necessarily. I think, and certainly we're hoping for Alabama's bowl game, that we'll have a full complement of available players that Bryce will come back and play in the game. And if that happens, my guess is he will have had ample time between this Saturday and, you know, January 1st or whatever the date of the game would be, a good 4, 5, 6 weeks there, that he will heal up and he'll be a different version of himself. And so I would not be surprised at all if this Alabama team that did not get invited or will not be invited into the playoff, but could potentially receive a really strong bowl bid and play, you know, a quality opponent, if this Alabama team doesn't really look good in the bowl game. And I'm talking, you know, 2010 season Michigan State or 2019 season against Michigan, where clearly Alabama outside of the playoffs made the statement that we probably should have been in the playoffs. And so I think with a fully healthy Bryce, a full complement of players, rest, full preparation, that Alabama will make a strong statement in the bowl game. And what a spectacular finish to the season that would certainly be, given where we are and the things that we have seen this season. Bryce did play into the fourth quarter. Now, I'll personally say that was a little bit disappointing for me. I hoped to get him out much earlier so we could see some of the other players. I know it's a function of the score and the point differential. Saban talks about playing the starters to help build depth, which is both true and ironic. You're building your depth chart by not letting your second team players play. That doesn't sound right, but also get the idea of letting more of your backups start to integrate in with the starters and the quarterbacks as well. I think it really was more a score differential. If we're really being honest, Alabama was up by 17 at half. Had it been 34 at half, then we probably have wholesale changes in the third quarter. We didn't start to see that until the fourth. That was a little bit disappointing. I would have liked to see more of the youngsters play earlier and us build depth in, I guess, more of a conventional way by letting the second and third teamers play. Again, Bryce took some hits in this game. He's been injured. We know that. He's been on a pitch count. He took 3 sacks, quite a number of hits, and there was near a Steve Berline moment when Austin Peay, defender off the edge, in fact, it was a corner blitz, really just leveled Bryce and hit him in the back and bowed him back, and Bryce fortunately held on to the ball. But if Daniel Moore was a governor, then he would paint that up in that direction. Milroe did play. He was 2 of 4, 23 yards, had an interception. I'm going to be sort of a contrarian here. I think that interception may actually bode well for the Tide sort of long term. If he I think he's going to be given an opportunity to make the decision if he wants to continue playing quarterback or entertain another position. If he elects to continue playing quarterback, it'll be at another institution of higher learning. If he, coming off this game, the interception, he decides, you know what, I really love it at Alabama and I will entertain playing another position, then he may well have a shot at sort of a running back, H-back, maybe wide receiver opportunity. We'll see how that plays out. I'm rooting for the kid to get to do what he wants to do. I just think if it's quarterback, it's somewhere else. And it's my 2 cents. Ty Simpson, he played as well as he was going to be able to play in a late sort of fourth quarter situation. He did get to throw the ball, and he was 2 of 2 for 20 yards. So I think there was clearly some restraint. We wanted to see him throw the ball, but I think there was clearly some restraint in the offense or the style of offense that Alabama was going to run at that point in the game. And I endorse that. I completely understand that. There's elements to that that are good. Ty Simpson looks like a quarterback, and I'm going to tease something we're going to talk about, you know, at the end. But on the field level, he absolutely looks like a quarterback. Milroe looks like just an incredible athlete. And we see that from our TVs. We see that from the stands. But at the Phil level, Ty level, Ty Simpson just looks like a quarterback. There's just no doubt about it. Let's talk about other components of the offense. Jace McClellan had himself a day, 17 carries for 156, two touchdowns. And it sort of baked into that was a solid but not spectacular performance by the offensive line. We'll get to them in a minute. But Jace was really the storyline of the running backs. Roy Dell Williams had 10 carries for 51. Jamarian Miller, who we've been calling for, he had 10 carries for 33. Clearly, he was running in a we're only going to run the ball situation. Trey Sanders came in, had a pair of carries. He had two for 14. It was interesting that he came in before Jamarian, but has significantly less carries. Again, my two cents, I think that speaks to his health, where he is. We love the kid, and we love the talent that he represents. I just don't think he has it in him at this stage. Coming back from his car accident, almost lost his life, could very well have lost his life in that accident, not just his career. And so the fact that he's come back to this level is a testament. Always tip of the cap to Trey Sanders. I think probably he's someone that moves on, and whether that's in the form of ending his career or moving on to a small school, I don't know. But for me, it was telling that when he did come in, he only had two carries. The running back that came in after him had 10. And now Jamarian's the youngster. He's a true freshman. Trey Sanders, depending upon how you sort his eligibility, is maybe a junior. With the COVID year, he might have 3 years left. With the red shirt, we have to go back and do the math on that. But I think he's had a number of years since the injury to come back and to sort of regain his form. We haven't seen it in that hate. I do hate that because we can go back and I've had nothing but great things to say about Trey Sanders. Noticeably absent from the running back rundown is Jahmyr Gibbs. He was held out due to an ankle. There was commentary that he potentially could have played last week, but he was held out, and Jace really had a day last week, and then Gibbs was held out this week, and Jace again had a tremendous day. I think all sort of signs point to Jahmyr Gibbs being available to go against Auburn, which I think that's a fair approach for the team to take. Let's get folks healthy, and let's move on. That's another, if you will, parallel back to the Mississippi State game. Alabama held a number of players out of that game, probably more pronounced on defense than offense. But that game was going into the bye, and so Saban's concept of, you know, 2 full weeks of rest is better than 1 week twice, if you will, just the extended duration. And I know Alabama plays this next week, but taking this week off for some of these players to get back to full health for the Auburn game, I think is a conscientious decision, and I think that will bode well for these individual players as well as Alabama as a whole. The Tide play 10 wide receivers, or 10 receivers caught passes, let's say it that way, and Jermaine Burton leaps and bounds, head and shoulders above the pack. He had 7 carries for 128 yards, 2 touchdowns. And I went back and read the numbers. I had made a prediction in the preseason that Burton in 1 year at Alabama would surpass his 2-year production totals that he had at Georgia. And 7 catches, 128 yards, 2 touchdowns is a strong contribution against that objective, but he's not going to make it. He had in 2 years at Georgia, he had 53 receptions so far at this point in the season. He has 34. He's not going to have 20 catches against Georgia or Georgia and in the bowl game, but he can make a run at it if he has a couple 5 or 7 yard or reception games. At 2 years in Georgia, he had 901 total offense or total yards, and he's at 503. He's not going to beat that. And but what he could do is he had 8 touchdown receptions at Georgia, and he had 6, or he has 6 so far this season. Interestingly enough, he kind of gets them in bunches. He had 2 against Austin Peay and he had two against Utah State early in the season. So it's not outside of the realm of possibility for him to have two against Auburn, and that would tie six. And then if he were to get one in the ball, or that would tie the eight, and he could have one in the ball. And so he could get close to the numbers. I thought he'd pass him in flying colors. And so color me wrong there. But it does one game that gets him so close. It does. My thought process wasn't wrong. He just didn't deliver on it, which has really been the fallacy of this team. Questions at wide receiver. And, Burton's part of the bunch there. Ja'Cory Brooks, who has been emerging. I should go back and look at his numbers compared to what I thought Burton would do, because that may actually be a more interesting comparison. Ja'Cory has really come on this season and has positioned himself as the number one receiver. He did only have one catch for 13 yards and left the game with something. Didn't really see or hear anything specific about that, but he left the game, did not return. And so hopefully he'll have an opportunity to get fully healthy. He's our Auburn killer. Remember last year, the final drive to come back and tie the game. It was Ja'Cory catching that pass. And so we need he's our good luck charm against Auburn. With Cam Latu out, Robbie out saw a lot of action, and he was able to reel in a pass. He had one for 11. I do think that sort of tamped down the passing game. Latu would have been good for five passes. I would have set the over-under at five passes and probably a touchdown against Austin Peay for Cam. And so when you take that out, the pass has got to go somewhere. And so Jermaine Burton was certainly a beneficiary of that. Robbie got one catch, but Cam, I think, would have had a big day against Austin Peay. And I suspect that he'll be positioned to have a good day against Auburn. So we'll see how that plays out. Bolden, he had a couple of catches. He played well. Bond had a good catch. He had a turnover. Law had a turnover that was on special teams. Tyler Harrell looked better. There was footage of him earlier in the season when he was really starting to get back to practice. And it was just the two-minute sort of practice cuts that they put out. And he looked very plodding. It looked like he was running on stilts or had tacks in his shoes back sort of midseason. So you could tell he was not sort of in full form. And more recently, there's been video practice footage released of him where he seems to run much more fluidity. He runs with much more fluidity. Looks like he's getting himself ready to play. And so I think he's going to benefit. We'll see what the Auburn game does. It's just one more week. I think every week he gets better. Every week he gets closer to being ready to perform. Tyler Harrell is a player who could really, really benefit by the bowl practice and the bowl game. Give him another 4 or 5 weeks to 6 weeks to get ready. And he could really light up a bowl game in a way that we were hoping or maybe even expected that he would do over the course of the season. And so that'd be a great way, and it's certainly a weapon that no one would imagine that we have. If he were to burst out onto the scene in a bowl game, that would be phenomenal. So that's certainly something to watch out for. Certainly something, like I said, something to watch out for. Hopefully he'll continue to progress. Offensive line solid, not spectacular. The run blocking was pretty good. Obviously, we've talked about the metrics there. Seth McLaughlin started. I believe he was identified as one of the coaches, offensive players of the week. Alabama coaching staff releases, you know, 5 to 8 guys every week. Couple offense, couple defense, maybe someone special teams. And Seth McLaughlin made that list, so tip of the cap to Seth in that regard. Tyler Steen turned an ankle. He turned his ankle. It was that corner blitz on the play where Bryce got hit. It was just before half. They sort of picked him up and walked him just straight to the locker room. And I thought, oh, that might be telling of the injury. But he was putting weight on it. And then I think the next play, Alabama just took a knee. So I wasn't watching the clock as much as I was watching the injury. Reports are he's day-to-day. It's an ankle. He'll be back. Not a high ankle sprain, but just, you know, sort of turned an ankle. I want to use the expression, not a diagnosis, but the expression you hear it a lot in basketball when the, someone's driving a lane and makes a move and the defender sort of falls the other way and they say, oh, he broke his ankles. We didn't literally break his ankles. He just like sort of juked him out of his jock, right? And that's kind of what happened to Steen. And then he ended up getting an ankle turn. And Bryce Probably didn't like the hit, but no worse for the wear. He was able to get back up and continue playing. That's the sack that, you know, could have been a Daniel Moore. Amari Kite came in relief of Tyler Steen. The second game in a row where he's done that, and he has looked he had more extended playing time on Saturday with Austin Peay, and I thought he looked well. I thought he looked good, and so, again, an opportunity to build upon the talent we have on this line for next year. Tyler Booker continued his rotation at the guard position. We've sort of broken that down before. Won't do all that again. But Tyler, I thought, played well. And I almost want to go back and sort of graph how the running game does when he's in versus out versus which of the positions. And, you know, I guess if I didn't have a day job, that's certainly something that we could look at doing. But my gut is the offensive line plays better when Tyler's in, and probably in at left would be my guess. Again, I haven't charted it, but I think that's probably what I would guess. But I like Javon Cohen, and I think he's got a home somewhere on the line. So it's going to be interesting to see how the line sort of shakes up more this offseason. I don't know that we're going to make a lot of wholesale changes during the season, the remaining season. We might test drive some things during the bowls. During the bowl, we'll see. But I think we still, for as disappointing as the offensive line has been, I think there's a lot of talent there with some additional coaching. I really like Coach Wolf. And so we'll see how that develops. Again, we've got the Auburn game and the bowl game. So we'll see what happens there. Many game balls on offense. I'm going Amari Kite for reasons already talked about. And I'm going to give my other two, Emil Ekior. There was a pull, and he just leveled a defender on, I think, what was a first down run for McClellan. That's the second week in a row the Kite has come in relief, and it's the second week in a row we've talked about Emil Ekior de-cleating someone on a pull. So I guess those are good trends, good trends for the offensive line.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Let's flip the field to defense. Again, there's a lot of things to like on this Alabama defense Saturday against Austin Peay. Pitched a shutout, only allowed 206 total yards. They held Austin Peay to 3 of 13 on third down conversions, 0 of 2 on fourth down conversions, 59 rushing yards allowed. They held Austin Peay to just a shade more than 24 minutes of total time of possession. The defense turned in 2 interceptions and 1 fumble, so 3 turnovers. That's always fun. You can counter that and saying, well, you know, there was a couple of busted coverages, you know, more than once. And actually, also, you could have reasoned that Austin Peay could have been up by, not up, but made necessarily, but Austin Peay, you know, could have had multiple touchdowns in the first half. There certainly was a missed field goal from Austin Peay, so they should have had 3. That drive could have netted in a touchdown. There's at least one more drive, and you could argue, too, if you're a little generous, that Austin Peay could have had 21 points going into half. You know, it's funny sometimes how we sort of play the result or the process, really whichever makes our point. And we really should just always focus, you know, I guess on the process. But the result here is very good as well. It was a shutout, and it's hard to lose when your defense pitches a shutout. It's hard to lose when your opponent scores no points. So let's talk about some individual performances. We're not going to name a whole host of characters, but we'll certainly name some. Kool-Aid McKinstry, and look, I'm going to get this out of the way early. He's a mini game ball winner this week. It's an award we don't give out, but we are today. He's also the Tough Guy Award winner for Alabama. McKinstry did have an interception on the day. He also was beat in coverage on one of the passes that we talked about. It was an overthrown ball, so it sort of is out in the wash. You want to go back and work on not letting the defender, not letting the receiver get so many steps away from you. But during pregame warmups, and I don't know if they, I don't even know if the game was broadcast or what was broadcast or whatnot, but, in the stands, it may have been hard to notice, and depending upon when people get there during warmups, early in on the field warmups, McKinstry was drilled by a punt. So there was one action. He was in one section of the end zone going through his stretch routine, and this was before all the team was out. So these are individuals going out to do individual additional work to prepare themselves. And punters go out there to sort of work their leg a little bit, and a handful of individual players go out for additional sort of stretching and loosening up before the full-on organized warm-ups, if you will. McKinstry was out there and was in some stretches and was holding some stretches, and a punt just came and just walloped him, hit him square in the face. And trainers came out and worked with him, and it looked like maybe it was gonna some bruising or swelling around his eye potentially. And there was some thought that he might not play. And he went, they didn't carry him, but they took him back into the locker room. And a few minutes later, clearly they had been working on him. A few minutes later, he came back out and really just to sort of test the brightness and how that was impacting. And he didn't stay out long, and he went right back and was kind of shaking his head. And I turned and said, "Hey, I don't think Kool-Aid's going to play today." And we get on into kickoff in the game, and he does play, and he ends up having a really good day as a punt returner, and he's a quality cornerback. And so we give a lot of credit and sort of tough guy points to Kool-Aid McKinstry. And you also, with some of what Saban said in his Monday presser, you really start to think, hey, Kool-Aid played a bigger contribution in this game than probably any of us knew. Eli Ricks was still in the protocol, so he wasn't playing. Terrion Arnold was manning the other corner spot. And it turns out, who knew until today, that Kyrie Jackson was suspended, and so he wasn't available. And so if you've got two guys that are out, one protocol, one suspension, and then Kool-Aid, who's I think our best corner, if he's not available due to an injury, you start getting five deep at corner, before you even kick off the game. And it's hard to know, we can look at, well, who was the first corner off the bench? Would that have been over the course of the game, would that have been who we played, or would we have moved maybe a Malachi Moore or a Brian Branch to the corner spot? It's hard to know. I'm glad we didn't have to, but that's an interesting thing that happened. There was no sort of report of it, and probably because very few people saw it, to be very candid, and a coaching staff is not going to report things that they don't need to report in that regard, because it just helps the other team. So maybe I should just shut up. But nonetheless, Kool-Aid's a tough guy, and played well. He got turned around one time, but that happens. He otherwise played well, and suspect him to come back and be full go as we continue forward. Brian Branch had 8 tackles. He had a TFL. He had an interception. It's really nice. He turned around. The ball came right to him. It was a tremendous play. Jaheim Otis had a really nice day, 3 tackles. He's a defensive lineman. He's not going to rack up a whole bunch of tackles, but he had 3, including contributing to a tackle for loss. That would have been on one of those short yardage situations, and so prevented a first down there, maybe even a fourth down. I'd have to go back and look specifically, but Otis had him a day. Deontay Lawson, middle linebacker who's rotated in for Jalen, dependent upon Jalen Moody, sort of platooned at the position. You could argue maybe he's taken over the position. I think coach would tell you we've got 3 starters for 2 positions at the middle linebacker spots, and so that's his way of sort of not answering. He looked Lawson looked really, really smooth in coverage. There was one point where I was counting the defensive backs as the play was unfolding, as the defenders were sort of streaking back in coverage, and I counted a dime, and then Lawson turned around. And I realized, we're a nickel. He's a linebacker. He's in coverage, but he looked so fluid and sort of in phase with the route with the receiver. I think maybe it was a running back or tight end, but at any rate, Lawson looked really, really good, and that's why he rotates in, because that's a skill set at the linebacker position that we really don't otherwise have. And so we have a lot of back box forward linebackers. Lawson can play box forward, but he can play box back as well. And so we like to see that from Lawson. Damian Payne had a fumble recovery on a flea flicker. And so it looked like the running back stepped in, turned, flipped the ball, and it wasn't accurate to the quarterback. And so it sat there on the ground. Damian Payne pounced on it and sort of rolled up and crawled in around it and just daring someone to take it away from him. There was a tremendous amount of celebration when he got back up. Damian's a youngster. And so the other sort of upperclassmen, other linemen on the field, really had a moment celebrating with him. Damian Payne looked like he was doing a Fred Sanford kind of dance, sort of flailing his arms. For him, I guess that was the big one. And then went over to the sideline when they handed him the belt, and he stood up. And there was a really sort of ruckus cheer when that happened. So a lot of celebration for Damian Payne, which was awesome. Another point I want to make, it didn't hurt us. It wasn't on a drive where Austin Peay scored. And it wasn't on a drive that sustained Austin Peay's ability to set up for the field goal, which they missed. In fact, it was on a play. It was on a drive where two plays later, Austin Peay punted, or I'm sorry, threw an interception. But still, you gotta know, talking to Malachi Moore, you gotta know, he did not learn the lesson from Dallas Turner last week that if you rip off an opponent's helmet, you don't, it's not a souvenir. You don't get to take it home. And so Dallas took off a helmet last week and had to give it back. And Malachi Moore, he really tried to take off a helmet this week, and he got flagged for the face masking. It's not a souvenir. Don't grab it. And the other team gets to keep it, even if you do strip them of it. Let's take a look at special teams. All right. Manuel Henderson, I'm going to tell you, buddy, I know you're new around these parts. Maybe you haven't heard us talk about this, but they give you the ball on a kickoff, fair catch signal. They give it to you on the 25. And so that is a 25% discount on all kickoff receiving merchandise. So 25% discount. All you got to do is wave your hand, catch the ball, don't run. Certainly don't take it out of the end zone when you're deep in the end zone. Again, it's 25% off the cost of the 100-yard field. So something to keep in mind there. Punt coverage, talking to you too. Key on your guy. Key on the returner. If he waves his arm to fair catch, then get the hell out of Dodge. Stop running, run away, get to the sideline, get off the field, whatever it is. Don't be in the vicinity of the ball where it can hit you. And as a result of not doing that, Kendrick Law, this is a stat I can get behind, right? Kendrick Law, who just let a ball bounce up and hit him, was credited with a negative 2-yard return. I can get behind that stat because it's reflective of what happens. When someone returns the ball out of the end zone and gets it to the 9, that should be a negative. Do the math on that. That should be a negative 16-yard kickoff return. And so we don't yet have that instituted, but I guess we'll keep fighting the good fight here. Will Anderson was 2 of 2 on field goals along of 30. I think that's good. That's reflective of Alabama moving the ball and maybe just stalling out, but close to the end zone. And those would have been nice to have those, you know, 8 more points to go on with the score would have been nice. Riker was 4 of 4 on his PAT, so he netted 10 points on the day. That's good. James Burnup had 1 punt for 46 yards. You'd like in a game like this maybe to not have to punt, but 1 is you know, not too terribly bad, and 46 is good as well. Kool-Aid, we talked about having a punt yard, a punt return. He had a 10-yard return, and it seems like that's been his his first punt return in almost nearly forever. So it was good to see him sort of shake and bake a little bit there. Next up, we've got the Iron Bowl, and Auburn visits Tuscaloosa. And so we're certainly looking forward to that. I think this is my prediction. I'm not going to go really super deep into the player and personnel and all that stuff, but this just feels like a statement game for Alabama. Alabama, I don't think, has really had one this season. And I think they need to plant their foot and make a full, firm, positive statement for this season, the stamp of approval, if you will, on this season. And Saturday not only is just the next opportunity for that, but it's one hell of a fine opportunity for that. And so I expect everyone but, you know, Justin Aboibi and Demoy Kennedy, who are out for the year both, I expect everyone else to be back healthy, ready to go, ready to contribute. And I envision this as a 40-10 style game. I think that Alabama gets it right on offense and defense. And you know, Auburn has some moments, but not enough to rise up and sort of be a threat on the day. Now, that's what we got for sort of our traditional sort of podcast, breaking down the game, breaking down the opponent, such as we do. I did promise that there was a little bit sort of extra, something extra. And so I'm going to spend just a minute on this, just, you know, sharing an experience that some of us had and welcoming just everyone that's listening to get in on this, right? Participate with us. And so we've talked about the support team. And so, you know, this podcast, we're not running a profit here. There's no risk of that happening. And so we say, hey, you know, for a few extra bucks to help us sort of offset or defray the cost of, you know, putting this together, sign up. And it's $18 a year, which guys even kid me that you could charge three times that much and we would still, you know, pay it. And, or you just do during the season and it's $2 a month. And so it's $18 a year. So it's cheaper than if you did 2 months a year, sort of 2 months, $2 a month all year. And so you kind of like get the summers for free. And you set up on auto, and so it's sort of auto, and it's so like silly, super simple, and it takes like three memberships to almost pay for hosting on one show, the editing on one show. So again, there's no risk of anyone making a profit here. It's just offsets. But anyway, sort of the point of that is we have that group, and that group, we call it the support team. That group has access to a Zoom call, and we get together. We try to do like a Zoom tailgate. Some would call it a Zoom tailgate or a pregame, a virtual tailgate, which is pretty awesome. I like that. And so typically if it's an away game, we do it on Thursday nights. If it's an Alabama home game, we'll do it. If it's an Alabama home game, we'll do it Thursday nights because I typically will go on Saturdays. And so I can't do a call Saturday morning. If it's an away, then we'll do it Saturday morning, and then we're going to do one. And then we do it a couple other times a year, whatnot, just sort of getting together. And so we've got a support team that's however many people are on the support team. And then everyone on the support team has access to be on what we call the Zoom team. And so it's just a feature of being a supporter. Some people take advantage of that feature, some don't. And so we have like the support team. We've got all the listeners that we love, everybody. And then we've got the support team, and then we've got the Zoom team. And we've sort of carved out what we're now going to call the travel team, which is a subset of even the Zoom team. And so what does that mean? What it means is we had sort of our first full-scale meetup in Tuscaloosa Saturday for the Austin Peay game. And so we kind of had the run of the town because it's a smaller game and such, and tickets were easier to get, and getting all tickets together was easy to do. We had about 9 total, 10 total. Most came and all and sat together in the stadium. Some were there with other friends and family, and so came and met us either at the game or one of the places that we were out and about in town. And I'm going to tell you, it was a phenomenal experience. We did a group of us got to town on Thursday, and we did the Hey Coach, we went to Bryant Museum, we went to a cigar shop, we did Dreamland, we did Five, which is, you know, probably one of my favorite restaurants in Tuscaloosa. We did De Palma's, we did Sessions, Nacho Alabama came and met us at Sessions, and so we had him come and talk to us and tell us a little bit about sort of his backstory, sort of his origin story, and we're going to have an interview with him. And the off season, we'll spend some time with that. I think we had about 10 bottles of bourbon. We all got together. A lot of us got together at an Airbnb and hung out. And we had about 10 bottles of bourbon that we were enjoying from a fire pit. We live streamed a Texas high school football playoff game because one of the guys on the Zoom team is a coach, is a high school coach in Texas. And so his team was in the playoffs. And so he couldn't be with us, but we were with him by virtue of the magic of YouTube and live streams and such. We scored on field passes. And so we were rotating passes amongst the group. And so we got to be on the field before the game and see all the pageantry and orchestration of the game. And one of the coolest things amongst so many, one of the most interesting things was seeing people that you know who they are and you're seeing them real live in person. And it was interesting to see that Alabama had probably 5 or 6 or 7 coaches and or analysts watching Austin Peay warm up. And they were all defensive. Sal Cenceri was over there. Todd Grantham was over there. Others that, given long enough, I probably could figure out who they were. But it was interesting, the brain trust that Alabama had watching the opponent warm up. And so so-and-so looks faster in and out of his breaks than we thought, or this guy's not nearly as fast as we thought, or so-and-so's got a hitch in his giddy up. And so just really milking the last bit of knowledge and information to go back, to carry into the locker room, to share with the players and to inform play calling. I thought that was very, very interesting. Probably on the other side of the field, there were players watching. I was watching the defensive guys watch the offensive. Probably on the other side of the field, there were offensive analysts sort of scouting, doing that last minute scouting for the defense, for the Austin Peay defense. So I thought that was phenomenal. It truly was. You may hear this, the expression, something being more than the sum of its parts. And this experience that we all had and shared was truly more than the sum of its parts. All of the individual components were a lot of fun, but melding it all together was certainly quite an experience. Certainly a new group of best friends, you know, getting to hang out. And I don't say that to brag. I say that to entice because this was, I don't want to say random, but these are guys that listen to the podcast. And when we all had an opportunity, hey, you know, support the show, they jumped in and we said, hey, we're going to do these Zoom calls. And they jumped in. And we said, hey, we're going to maybe do this other thing. And they jumped in. And it was all a function of saying, heck yeah, I want to do that. And so if any of that is interesting to you, then you have the opportunity to say, heck yeah, I want to do that. And gosh, for $2 a month, I have an opportunity for all of this to sort of open up for me, which is worth a lot more in terms of the friendship and camaraderie, or $18 a year. And you can join the group that laughs at me for only charging that much for it. At any rate, it's a phenomenal time, and we would love to triple the amount of people that are on the Zoom calls and, you know, opting in to participate in some of these things. So put that out there. It was a phenomenal experience. I'll probably put together some of the pictures and post them on the website. Probably need to get some permissions from some of the guys, but we took some really fun photos, really had some good times, and it really sort of inspired me to think of, like, 4 or 5 order of operation style interviews that we could do maybe in the off season. So hopefully that time sort of inspires us to do something like that, which is just more content that everyone gets to enjoy. So anyways, we've done sort of commercials. We've done like ads on sort of the support group. And so that was like a feature film, if you will, on the support group, but definitely, not trying to do a hard sell, but just trying to say, gosh, if you're not in on this, like, this might be really something you'd want to be on. I would be the guy. I would be the person that would be the lagger. I went out with a girl. This is so long ago. And she worked in the music sort of industry, is sort of interning while she was in school. And we're talking about albums and music and stuff. And I said, well, I never buy an album until I've heard 2 or 3 of the songs. And I realized, oh, I like the music, so I'm going to go get the album. And she goes, oh yeah, in the industry we call you a laggard. And I was like, oh, okay, because you don't buy it not knowing, you don't buy it until you know. And so I thought, well, yeah, that's me, that's who I am. And and so this whole sort of support thing, I would be a laggard, and I just said that's what I would be. And so I would not probably even have an interest until after hearing about something like this. And so if that's who you are, that's awesome, because you're my people. And so if you have any questions, any level of interest, definitely reach out. AlabamaFootballPodcast.com on the website. There's ways to reach me. Direct AlabamaFootballPodcast@gmail.com, and we will answer every single question we absolutely can about this and just Alabama football in general, because we love getting questions and sort of rolling those up into content. All right, I've rambled enough. We're going to pull the plug on this. This has been, say it with me, another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at AlabamaFootballPodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.